Good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne, is at the controls this morning. Early last month, Illinois lawmakers passed a bill that advocates believe will improve quality of care and safety for people living in the state's nursing homes. These reforms were prompted by news reports last fall that found nursing homes were understaffed, that there were places where residents had faced threats from the people living alongside them, and that in some cases people were given the wrong medications. Next time on Focus, this morning on Focus, we'll be talking about nursing home reform, and we have with us two guests. Both of them joining us by telephone. Sally Patrone is the state long-term care ombudsman. That is an office that is part of the State of Illinois Department on Aging. We'll be talking about what exactly that office is all about and what her responsibilities involve. Also joining us is Mark Heyerman. He is a clinical professor at the University of Chicago Law School, where he teaches, among other things, classes in mental health advocacy and mental health law. He's member of the board of the Mental Health America, and that's formerly known as the National Mental Health Association. He's board member and past president of Mental Health America of Illinois. He co-chairs the Illinois Mental Health Planning and Advisory Council, and back in 1988, he served as executive director of the Governor's Commission to Revise the Mental Health Code of Illinois. As I say, both of them joining us this morning by phone as we talk. Questions from listeners are certainly welcome. The only thing we ask for people calling in is that they try to be brief. That way we can get as many callers in as possible, but certainly calls are welcome, emails also. You can call us if you're here in Champaign-Urbana. Call us at 333-9455. The toll-free line is 800-222-9455. Use that one if it would be long-distance call. And if you'd like to email your questions, you can write will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, certainly questions from people who are listening are welcome. And we say good morning to Sally Patrone. Hello.
Hello.
And to Professor Heyerman. Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks, both of you, for being with us. Just maybe for a moment here, I should ask Sally Patrone to talk a little bit about what the Illinois Long-Term Care, the Office of the Illinois Long-Term Care Ombudsman of the State of Illinois is all about.
Okay, I will. Well, this is Sally, and good morning. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of this program. The Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program is a statewide program, and briefly, it is a resident advocacy program for all residents that are located and reside in long-term care facilities.
Okay.
That's it in a nutshell. We have paid and volunteer ombudsmen that are located around the state, and they are more than willing to handle complaint investigations and resolve them to the satisfaction of the resident. We make regular presence visits. We do inquiries and also provide consultations.
All right, and this is the kind of thing where if someone has a family member who's in a nursing home in long-term care and they have concerns about the quality of care that they're being provided or what conditions are in the home where they're living, you could be a place where they could go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We receive thousands of calls from caregivers, family members, and even residents inquiring and wanting our help, which is there is no charge, of course, for our service, but we ensure that the residents' rights are protected and not violated.
Right.
Absolutely.
One question I'd like to ask, and maybe again I'll start with Ms. Patrone, and then Professor Heyerman, you can comment too. I was a little struck, I think maybe some people were, by just how quickly this reform package actually moved through the General Assembly. Starting last fall, when in response to this investigative series that was, I think mostly it was the Chicago Tribune, the governor formed a nursing home safety task force, and they had hearings, and then some legislation was put together, and then it actually passed. Did it surprise you just how fast this happened?
This is Sally. Yes, it did surprise me. We all knew that everyone had a deadline to reach, and that was to ensure that this type of legislation was going to pass out of this particular General Assembly. So the timing was impeccable.
Uh-huh. And Professor Harmon, I maybe here this is a different way of asking the question, but it seems to me that the issues here, the concerns, particularly the concerns that there were people, mentally ill people, who were in nursing homes where there may be some issues of the security of the other residents, it's something that's been an issue for some time now. I don't think that anybody really should have been surprised, though. If there had not been for these stories that the Tribune ran, do you think, in fact, we'd be talking about this now?
Well, I think that's the right question. So almost all of the problems that were identified by the Tribune have been known to many people for a long time, and the Tribune deserves a lot of credit for sort of publicizing these, forcing the state to take action on them. And then the governor reacted quite promptly with almost immediately appointing this task force. And I think the task force did a pretty amazing job in a relatively short period of time in terms of coming to grips with what the actual facts were and then coming up with a series of pretty detailed recommendations. So, yes, I do think there was a general sense on people's part that we had an opportunity to correct long-standing problems in nursing homes and not just those involving persons with mental illness, because of the attention that had been focused on this, and that people didn't want to waste this opportunity by putting it off until next year or the future.
Mm. And I want to ask Sally Vetrone, it's on the governor's desk, and I think that the governor has given every indication, in fact, that he will sign this. Do you believe that he will, and do you have any idea when?
I don't know when that time will be, but I remain very optimistic that it should be signed very soon. And I mean, it took an awful lot of time and effort by a lot of advocates and a lot of nursing home industry, as well as other individuals, you know, that were working on around the clock to ensure that a large long-term care reform bill would be passed. And the provisions in the bill will make the residents' life safer and will make the workers who care for them to be better workers. So I'm very optimistic, and I really perceive this to be happening very, very soon.
The major issue here, I think that the thing that people were probably most disturbed by and concerned with and maybe surprised about, is this fact that, and according to, again, the stories that were published in the Tribune, that mentally ill patients constitute, and I'm reading from the story, mentally ill patients now constitute more than 15% of the state's total nursing home population of something over 92,200. The number of residents convicted of serious felonies has increased to 3,000, among them 82 convicted murderers, 179 sex offenders, and 185 armed robbers. And it apparently also, more than any other state, we have used nursing homes to house young people who were convicted of felonies. And the thing that was so shocking and disturbing is that we had cases where some of the people we're talking about actually had been found to have assaulted the frail and elderly people that they were living alongside. And let me here go to Professor Heierman and ask this basic question that I'm sure a lot of people asked. Why are these people have a history of mental illness and perhaps have been found to be guilty of convicted of committing violent crimes? Why are these people in nursing homes?
Well, this is a complicated problem. So part of the problem is, I think it's useful to think about this in several different ways. So people who are in nursing homes for other health care problems are not going to be immune from mental illness. So, and part of the problem is that we have not tried to make sure that whoever you are in a nursing home, you get good mental health services. So even if you don't, if you stop putting people in nursing homes just because they're mentally ill, we desperately need to improve the quality of mental health services for the other folks who will remain. Then the problem that you identify about lots of people who are in nursing homes solely because they have a mental illness, that is really a result of decisions made that I think have been influenced by extensive lobbying by nursing homes, frankly, and they're a very powerful lobby, and they have been able to capture money that could be better spent, and we could save a lot of money if we would remove people with serious mental illnesses who do not have some other reason for being in a nursing home and give them services in the community. And that's what other states have done. That's what sets Illinois apart from virtually every other state, is that we say we treat people in nursing homes when they don't need that level of care. Mm-hmm. Some of them may need more care in a hospital, but most of them need care, more appropriate care in the community, and we have failed to pay for that care.
And so what I hear you saying is, you hear that many nursing homes are interested in their or willing or both to have these people, to house these people, because their costs are paid by Medicaid, and it's a way to make some money.
Yes, but interestingly, so that's the problem of putting people with mental illnesses in with other folks. That's not really a problem either if the state would require them to provide decent mental health services. So all of the horror stories that were reported by the Tribune involve people who are not getting adequate mental health services. There is no reason to think that you can't have people with serious mental illnesses in nursing homes, and you always will. You can't avoid that. And have everyone be quite safe so long as mental health services are provided to the people with mental illnesses. In the course of the Nursing Home Task Force hearings, the Department of Public Health, which regulates every nursing home, and there are at least 15,000 people with mental illnesses in nursing homes, admitted that they didn't have a single person with mental health expertise on their inspection teams.
Well, let me go back here to Sally Petronet, and there are a number of provisions now in this nursing home reform bill that had passed the General Assembly and is waiting for the governor's signature that try to get at this, they have to do with things like screening before people are admitted. They have to do with things like how people are housed and the need for separate and secure housing, if that's deemed appropriate for these people, and then also getting at this issue, and it touches on the last thing Professor Harmon was talking about, and making sure that if you have a nursing home and if you're going to have these kinds of residents, then you also need to have people on staff that have the skills and the training to care for them.
And provide the service.
And provide the service.
And Mark touched on a very important key, is that there are not enough mental health services to go around that are provided in nursing homes right now. And there has to be something done. You know, I've been going around the state now and actually visiting facilities and realizing that those individuals that do have a mental illness and they are in a nursing home are not treated properly. They do not receive the mental health services that they deserve. They really do not. And I'd like for Mark to actually also talk about, you know, what happened back in the 60s when the deinstitutionalization happened and when the psychiatric hospitals were shut down, because to me I think that shows the public, you know, that when those hospitals shut down, you know, where did those people end up going? And Mark, you'll have to help me with this. I mean, did they end up going to the nursing homes, to the emergency rooms, out on the streets, what have you?
Yeah, that's an important part of the story, I think, yeah.
I mean, Sally is absolutely right, and she gives several of the correct answers that, in fact, we used to have 55,000 state psychiatric hospital beds, that is, mm-hmm. hospital beds operated by the state of Illinois. We now have 1,400, so 55,000 to 1,400. And the number of private psychiatric hospital beds has also declined, so that we now have just over 3,000 of those. We've lost more than 1,000 private psychiatric hospital beds in the last year, 15 years. And so, yes, people with mental illnesses have gone to nursing homes. They are homeless. They are ending up in emergency rooms. And they are ending up, unfortunately, also in the criminal justice system, where there are more people with mental illnesses in the state prison system than there are in all of the public and private psychiatric hospitals combined. And the reason for this is that, you know, deinstitutionalization, no one really thinks we can go back to having 55,000 state psychiatric hospital beds. No one really thinks that's appropriate. But what we didn't do was to fund proven and effective community mental health services in this state. And that is, and instead we have ended up with a variety of sort of not very good alternatives, including the alternative of putting many people in nursing homes.
Yeah, and that's the intention. It sounds as if the idea of deinstitutionalization was good, in the sense that the idea was that we would take people out of these very large institutions and house them in provide some kind of care at a more local level in the community. They could be closer to family members. The quality of care you would hope that would be better in a place where the patient population was smaller. So for a variety of reasons, it sounded like that would be good. The problem was that we just didn't follow through on it.
That's correct. And the thing that's so tragic about that is that we know what kinds of services folks with serious mental illnesses need to allow them to survive and indeed even thrive in the community. Supportive housing is quite effective, and supportive employment works. A lot of people with even the most serious mental illnesses can engage in some kind of work, even highly productive work, and they need some assistance in getting them to do that. That all kinds of research supports the effectiveness of a supportive employment. And, of course, to the extent to which people get back into the workforce, they pay taxes and help our budget.
Let me just very quickly reintroduce our guests. Mark Heyerman is a clinical professor at the University of Chicago Law School and teaches courses in mental health advocacy and mental health law. He's a member of the board of Mental Health America, something formerly known as the National Mental Health Association. He's also board member and past president of the Mental Health America of Illinois. And also with us by telephone, Sally Patron. She is the state long-term care ombudsman. This is an office that exists within the Illinois Department on Aging and does advocacy for all of individuals who live in long-term care in the state of Illinois. And questions are welcome. We're talking about a recent legislation that just passed the State House, the General Assembly, and is awaiting the governor's signature, that would change the way nursing homes operate, and particularly getting at this issue of how people who are in nursing homes and have mental illness are housed, to make sure that everybody gets good care and that everybody is safe and secure, something that was really prompted by a series of stories, investigative stories that were published last fall in the Chicago Tribune and were pretty disturbing. So obviously it got people's attention in Springfield. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I want to let me go back to Sally Patron. Have you talk a little bit about staffing, just because I understand that, again, one of the things that this legislation tries to get at is the staff-client ratio, you know, the staffing. And it's my understanding that the state of Illinois has, if not the lowest, one of the lowest staffing levels, you know, when you look at that ratio, in the entire country. Is that right?
That is correct, and with this new legislation, it would raise the staffing ratio to 3.8 hours of skilled care in skilled care facilities and 2.5 hours of intermediate care over the next 4 years. So, yes, and it would be so great to see that these types of staffing ratios will be increased during the course of I believe it's over the next 4 years. And I have to say that the staffing ratio, the staffing numbers are good, and it is not subject to appropriation, which is a really great thing. And I have to thank Senator Staines and also Senator Collins for pushing both the staffing numbers forward.
Mm-hmm. But that's obviously that will be a challenge for these nursing homes because it means they're going to have to go out and hire more people.
Yes. They will, but we have found that the correlation of the quality of care is related to the staffing ratio. So we know that that has to be enforced and that there will be higher standards of care through changing the staffing ratio. It has to be done.
Mm-hmm. You have any feeling for why it is that Illinois was so low on the scale in terms of staffing ratio?
I really don't. I wish I had an answer, but I don't.
Yeah. I think this has been really a tribute to the fact that we have not taken seriously our job of enforcing quality care in nursing homes, and the Department of Public Health has been underfunded and understaffed to do that. And hadn't had the right staff, and so I think they have enforced nursing homes to provide the quality care that we all hope and believe they should provide, and I share Sally's enthusiasm for the provisions in the bill that is on the governor's desk in terms of the staffing ratios. I think that'll make a great deal of difference, and of course it'll be important for us to watch carefully to make sure those staffing ratios are actually complied with.
Mm. Well, this maybe gets at another issue, and I'll go back to Sally Patron, because this maybe gets more difficult because we are talking about having to spend more money, that is the state having to spend more money. It's also my understanding one of the provisions of this new bill is that it's supposed to increase the number of inspectors, state inspectors, who go into nursing homes pretty significantly. I think we're talking about something like a doubling of the number of people, and you have to wonder with the budget the way that it is whether that's going to be a problem making sure that happens and finding the money to, because again, what it means is it's going to mean hiring more people.
Correct. What the current bill states is that, which again, down the road, that there will be, right now there's one surveyor for every 600 licensed bed. And with the new law, which again is not subject to appropriation, which is a great thing, it'll bring on more surveyors into the system. Mm-hmm. So then in a three-year time, we'll have the support of one surveyor, one public health surveyor for every 300 beds. And the problem has been is that the Nursing Home Safety Task Force and all the advocates really pushed for this, as well as increasing the staffing ratios, because we realized that we had to get our job done. In order to get our job done, we had to push for both of those. The problem, of course, happened when the nursing home industry were wondering how is that going to be paid for. Mm-hmm. And so we pushed to increase the license fees as well as increase the bed tax. The license fees, those did go into, they will go into effect once the bill passes, but the bed tax was not included in the bill. And the problem is that the nursing homes felt that they should not be paying for the public health surveyors, nor should they be having to pay for anything else that would offset the additional charge for this bill.
You know, perhaps this is just the way things work, but I wonder, Professor Harmon, does it frustrate you a little bit that this thing now, it looks like it's a good package, it has been passed, looked like it's going to be signed by the governor, and yet it's going to take several years before the provisions are fully implemented?
Well, sure, but I think at least as to those provisions, they're in positive law and they will have to be complied with. I should just say, the more frustrating thing about this is that, in fact, the bill as passed does not require us to remove people with serious mental illnesses from nursing homes, and that is something that I'm hoping will be taken up, because it will save the state money and improve the care of people with mental illnesses?
Well, that's here again. I think that this is another. It's a good question and also a difficult matter, because what you're saying is that for the quality of care for those people, there are better. We could better provide better care to them in a different kind of setting. Quite aside from the security issues for the other nursing home residents, if we look at the mentally ill patients who are there, that's not the best way to take care of them. The problem is, as we've discussed earlier, in so many communities, is there an alternative? Is there some other place that they can go? And if not, then how do we make that happen?
Well, the answer is that if we take the money that is being, in my view, wasted on spending it on nursing homes, those alternatives can be fairly easily created. I don't mean overnight, but one of my disappointments about the bill as passed is that there wasn't a mandated 5-year commitment to rebalancing the system, is one of the phrases that we talk about, which is to say, less dependence on institutional care. I should say on a positive note that the Quinn administration signed a consent decree, which hasn't been approved yet by the federal court finally, but which commits it to a multi-year process of removing some people from the specialized nursing homes for mentally ill people. And that's an important development. There's about 4,500 people who are in nursing homes where everyone has a mental illness. And those facilities are among those that, in the Tribune reports and in the task force, are found to be giving very bad care, even though they only care for people with mental illnesses.
And the problem with the quality of the care, is it something about the facility? Is it something about the client base? Is it something about staffing? Is it about training?
It's about staffing and training. Mm-hmm. I mean, and by staffing, I mean not just quantity, but quality and classifications of staffing. So you need to have the right kinds of people. You need to have enough psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers available to ensure that quality care is being delivered. And so the state is paying a lot of money, $35,000 per person per year, to house people with serious mental illnesses in these dedicated nursing homes. And that's a lot of money, but we're not getting, the patients aren't getting very good care for that. And if we really tried to do this right, we'd have to pay even more. And I am confident that if we move that money into the community and give people supportive housing and the kinds of wraparound services that people with serious mental illnesses need, we would save a lot of money and persons would get better care. So you can't do this overnight because, yes, as your question suggests, you know, the reason we don't do this is in part because we do not have those services, which is to say we don't pay for them.
Mm-hmm. We are just a little bit past our midpoint. I have a caller we'll get right to. Let me just introduce quickly again our guests. Professor Mark Heyerman is clinical professor at the University of Chicago Law School, where he teaches courses in mental health advocacy and mental health law. And also joining us by telephone is Sally Patron. She is the state long-term care ombudsman. It works in the office of Illinois Long-Term Care Ombudsman. That's part of the Department of Aging, and it's an office that advocates for all of the residents in long-term care in the state. And we're talking about nursing home reform. Questions are welcome, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. You can also email your thoughts to will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller in Savoy, line one. Hello.
Good morning. I do have some things worth listening to here. I was around in the 1960s when the community mental health movement began in Illinois. I can say that the original thinking didn't really include nursing homes that were supposed to do treatment. Nursing homes weren't supposed to do treatment. beyond just having a benign place for the chronically ill to live and get their medicine taken in a reasonably timely manner. I have no idea what the status is of nursing homes now in the state of Illinois. I have no idea what other kinds of illnesses are, and I'm going to use an unkind word now, quote, parked, unquote, in nursing homes. I can tell you that originally I helped get the 708 board law passed in Champaign County. That was to enhance community care. I can tell you that I felt betrayed, and I felt that I betrayed the citizenry, because a year or two after that, the state legislature people futzed with the law to make it so that the tax could be raised without the public's consent. I don't know whatever came of that in the end. I can tell you that it's similar to what the legislature did with the lottery idea. That was sold to the public that all the profits from the lottery would go to education, and then not too long after that passed, our friends in the state legislature arranged to take that money and put it into the general fund, I believe that's what it's called, and of course, sleight of hand, they managed to tell everybody, oh, well, it was still going to go to education, blah, 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 blah. I'll leave it to others to track how that really happened. I can tell you that Peoria State Hospital was the last state hospital that was just totally closed, I believe. It might be that Chicago State Hospital was closed after that or before that, but I can tell you that Chicago State Hospital was replaced by the Reed Zone Center, which is a very large, big deal thing right next door and on the same grounds. So that was a fairly obvious improvement. I can tell you that the unions that covered the Peoria State Hospital employees raised lots of you-know-what, and the legislators kind of chickened out thereafter. And beyond that, I don't know what happened afterwards, but I can assure you that original thinking included that nursing homes weren't supposed to deliver treatment. The people with, if they decompensated and needed to go inpatient for a period of time and get restabilized, that was supposed to happen in the proper zone centers or some of the remaining state hospitals. The concept's supposed to include that, well, I think I've said enough about that. I'll close by saying if I were had the ability and the motivation and the time and energy, I would suggest to people that you might want to look to see who owns these nursing home things, and were they originally a deal arranged with some of the people in the departments of mental health or closely associated to the departments of mental health, and was this sort of a neat money-making thing to so-called give improved care out in nursing homes? And I will just go back to ending with the statement that nursing homes weren't supposed to be places where you delivered particular treatment. And I suggest to you that any efforts to retrain and augment and improve staff in those places is money down the tubes. That's not the solution, and you're not really going to get anywhere. And I think that's about all I should say. Thank you, David.
All right. Well, I don't know. Professor Hyrman, you want to try to respond to some of that?
Well, again, I would just point out a distinction, which is we will always need to have nursing homes or something like them for people who are frail and elderly and for people with a variety of other physical illnesses that don't merit being in a hospital. And there are plenty of fine nursing homes. And as long as you have people in nursing homes, people who get elderly, we're all going to get old, we hope, is the only alternative is to die young. So we will need to go in nursing homes, but there isn't anything magical that immunizes old people from mental illnesses. And so, and in fact, the prevalence of mental illness among the elderly is roughly the same as it is among the rest of the population, which is to say 1 in 5 people have some kind of a mental illness. A lower number have more serious illnesses. So you will have to have mental health services provided in nursing homes. So that's the one half of it. I certainly agree with the caller that if we're talking about putting people in nursing homes solely because they have a mental illness, I think it's a waste of time and money, and I think it's a waste of our money to try to make those services better and hire more staff. I think we should be getting those folks out of nursing homes where we can deliver services more effectively and more humanely. And I think it's going to be very difficult in the long run to ensure quality care for people with serious mental illnesses in nursing homes, despite some wonderful provisions in this in Senate Bill 326, which is on the governor's desk.
Mm. How I'm not sure that I have not asked this question. I'm not sure that it's come up directly, but even if it has, let me ask you again. How many people are we talking about here? How many if we're talking about people who have serious mental illness who are living in nursing homes and probably shouldn't be there and maybe would benefit by living in a different setting with a different kind of care, how many people are we talking about?
So in the specialized nursing homes, they're often called IMD nursing homes. Mm-hmm. IMD stands for Institutions for Mental Diseases. These are nursing homes that don't get any Medicaid money. Our state tax dollars cover the entire $35,000 per year. There are 4,500 people in, I think it's 26 or 27 IMDs across the state. They're disproportionately in the Chicago area, but they are across the state. So that's 4,500 people. There's probably another 10,000 people who are in nursing homes mixed in with other folks and are in nursing homes solely because of a serious mental illness. And then, of course, there is everybody else in nursing homes, and many of those folks have less serious mental illnesses. The mental illness is not why they're there, but they need appropriate care for their mental illness if and when it occurs.
Mm. Let me ask Sally Patron, because you, I'm sure that you have some idea of what Illinois nursing homes look like and what kind of care they deliver and what kind of problems people have or what kind of concerns people have for their family members who are there. I'm sure that in the course of all of this, that the nursing home industry in Illinois has said, you know, we don't want to take anything away from the seriousness of the kind of incidents that have been reported. But at the same time, I'm sure that they said, but in most of the time, most people are getting good care and they're secure where they are. And it's not it's not like this is a problem everywhere you go. How serious a problem do you think this really is?
Well, I have to say, I mean, there are good nursing homes and then there are bad nursing homes. Mm-hmm. And there are good nursing homes that provide very good care. And mainly they have the qualified individuals who are staff members who provide that type of care that's needed primarily to the older population. And you got to remember in the past, you know, nursing homes used to be called rest homes. But now that whole phenomenon has changed. And we have very, very sick, very, very frail and sick older adults that live in nursing homes. And they are being now mixed with the young mentally ill population. And under one roof. And I have a real problem with that. And I know that Mark kind of talked about that too, mm-hmm. that you just can't mix the vulnerable with individuals that have a mental illness. And I agree that many mentally ill individuals do not become aggressive, do not danger other individuals, but the mix is just impossible for me to comprehend and to believe that it is a good mix.
Yeah. And I suppose there you've made, I think, a very good comment, something that we probably would want to underscore, and that is that most people who are mentally ill are not a threat to others.
Correct.
They're maybe likely a threat to themselves.
Yes.
But they're not violent, and they're not going to be a threat to others.
As long as they are treated properly and receive the mental health services.
Yeah, that's the thing that I would emphasize. Yeah. The one qualification, I have no problem. I mean, I'm not a big fan of putting people in nursing homes because of a mental illness, but the problem of mixing is caused by the failure to provide treatment.
Yes.
And every single horror story that the Tribune reported was about someone who was not getting decent mental health services. You shouldn't be blaming the mentally ill people for our failure to give them the care they needed. The mental illness is not their fault. It's a biological condition, just like cancer or heart disease, and we need to provide appropriate care to people wherever they are. And so long as we continue to put lots of people with mental illnesses in nursing homes, the state must commit itself to ensuring that nursing homes provide high-quality care.
Well, do you, to what extent will it help if, it's my understanding that one of the provisions of this legislation is saying to nursing homes that if you are going to have patients who have mental illness, then what you have to do is, in a sense, create a separate facility or a separate area of the facility to house those people to deal with security issues. And of course, there are the other questions about are you providing adequate services and treatment for them? Are you saying that you don't really even think that's such a great solution if you have a separate wing, a separate area that's specifically dedicated to those individuals, that if they're under the same roof with the people who are frail elderly and they're just there because they need custodial care, that's not a good thing?
Well, I have a slight difference of opinion about what exactly the bill does. So the bill has two separate important provisions with regard to people with mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. One of them says that the state must now come up with a set of regulations about what, if you have anyone with mental illnesses, with serious mental illnesses, to ensure that people get care. That doesn't require segregation at all. Doesn't require segregation. Segregation is not necessarily needed. There is a separate provision that says that if you have people who, in the context of a nursing home, remain dangerous, you must segregate them, irrespective of what the reason is for their dangerousness. And that, so some of the people who are maybe dangerous in nursing homes are people who have substance abuse problems or have other problems unrelated to a serious mental illness. I'm not a big fan of that provision. In my view, if only because I'm concerned that it, instead of focusing on the treatment that's needed to prevent people from being dangerous, we will focus on blaming these people and then putting them in these segregated mm-hmm. facilities. Certainly, if they're in segregated facilities, they will not be able to prey on other people, if that's the right phrase. They will not. But the question is, why were they dangerous to begin with? And I am hoping that the regulations that are promulgated under this provision will force a clear look at the cause of dangerousness.
Yeah, and Mark is referring to it's called a behavioral management unit, and
yep.
that at the facility will actually have to purchase a certification in order to run one of those behavioral management units. And it would be a wing or some section of a long-term care facility is where a unit would be built and developed. So, and I too have problems with that. I don't know. I feel like we're still mixing it, even though that they're segregated, and even though you'll have self-contained units, you know, within facilities. I don't know. I just have real concerns about that.
Mm. Well, it sounds as if also that overall still we have a way to go here, even after the governor signs this, that how you do this, how you fulfill the requirements here, there still are going to have to be regulations written, and as we discussed earlier, there are going to have to be people hired to do the inspections. It sounds like that there's still there once it's signed, there's a lot of work, maybe years of work left that would be required to actually implement these things. That is that right?
That is correct, and I do know that Department of Public Health and DHS and State Police and Health Facilities Service and the Review Board, I mean, they're all working, and even the Department of Financial and Professional Regs, I mean, they're all working very hard at this very moment. seeking input from advocates, from association representatives, from even employees of nursing homes and facilities, and when they start developing these rules to implement this particular public act. So they have been working nonstop, and it's going to take time. It really is. But their plate is very, all of the state agencies are very, very full. But they're also committed to ensuring that that they'll keep on working and ensure that the provisions and the rules and the regs will be developed. So it is a long process, but it has started, and we just got to keep realizing that it will evolve continuously, but it will be successful.
We have maybe about 5 minutes left. Just quickly, I'd like to introduce again the guest. Sally Petrone is the state long-term care ombudsman. She works in the Office of the Illinois Long-Term Care Ombudsman. It's part of the Illinois Department of Aging, and what they do is advocate for all of the residents who are in long-term care in the state of Illinois. Also joining us from Chicago is Professor Mark Heyerman. He's clinical professor at the University of Chicago Law School and teaches courses in mental health advocacy and mental health law. And questions welcome. Again, if somebody wants to call in before we finish up, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Sally, and I don't know if this is a difficult question for you to answer, but I get the impression that some people think that maybe the more serious problems with nursing homes are in those that are for-profit. Do you think that there is a big difference in the quality of care when you compare for-profit nursing homes with nonprofits?
Well, I know that there are individuals that have actually studied that, and they have felt that the staffing ratio, there is a huge difference in the staffing ratio of a not-for-profit versus a for-profit. There's also the quality of care does diminish in certain situations, but it really, it also depends, too, upon the ownership of the facility. We have some great owners. We have some not so good owners that actually own chains of facilities. And so you have to look at that too and consider the not-for-profit versus the for-profit. So I have to say that I feel that the not-for-profit, they do have better care. They really try and work to ensure that their profit, that they do have a little bit of profit, but they also ensure that the quality of care is right up there. So
we have a couple minutes left. We'd like to see if we can include some other callers. We have another person in Civaway, interestingly enough, here, line number one. We'll go there. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yes, I was wondering how easy it is to sort out whether actually a staff member might be doing the abuse as opposed to a mentally ill patient and then kind of hanging it on the mentally ill patient, because it's easy to do that, and if there's any way they can sort that out.
All right. I don't know. Does it in the particular cases that we've talked about, has it been clear who really was responsible, and that we are really talking about patients being guilty and not staff members?
Well, I think in the actual incidents that were reported in the paper, it's clear that where we're talking about some violence between residents, that there are many of that there have been residents with serious mental illnesses who were who were in fact violent in a nursing home. My own view is that in every one of those instances is reported, and overwhelmingly that's due to the failure to get good treatment. So I hold the facility responsible, not the individual. There have been problems with staff at nursing homes engaging in inappropriate and sometimes criminal behavior, and this bill is going to toughen up some of the regulation of nursing homes to reduce that. Anytime you run a large institution, you will have some problems with some staff, and partly that's a response to not having enough staff. So if you have enough staff, there's always someone around, so that prevents, if you do have a bad staff person, there may be someone there who can be a witness to that, or discouraging that staff person from engaging in any kind of inappropriate behavior.
Mm. Well, just to go back, I want to pick up on something because we had an off-air question from somebody who wanted to be clear, and in response to my question to Sally Patron about your general feeling, and obviously we're talking in generalities here about which is better, for-profit or non-profits, that you felt that the quality of care delivered by non-profits was better. I think the caller was particularly wondering about this issue we talked about earlier, that is the staffing ratio, and whether, if you look at the two, where you find your can you say about where you find your better staffing ratios?
You know, I know that SIU Healthcare, the union that has most of the healthcare workers in nursing homes, they actually did a study, and I don't have their information in front of me, but they did do a study, and you know, I would advise your listeners to contact them. And they would surely be able to answer that question.
Okay, that's the Service Employees International Union, which is the one that represents a lot of people in that union. They're healthcare workers and people who work in nursing homes. Chances are that's their group, and probably if they have internet access, no doubt they could go to the. I'm sure that they have a website, and they might be able to get at that kind of information.
Yes, and also the Healthcare Council of Illinois, the nursing home industry, they also did do a study and of their members who are licensed facilities, and they would also have an accurate account of that as well.
All right. We're at the point here where we're going to have to finish, I am sorry to say, with perhaps some other things we could discuss. I'm sure, though, if people are interested in getting more information on this, can they go to the Illinois Department of Aging for that?
Yes. Actually, the best route is to actually look at the synopsis that is actually placed on the website of Governor Quinn, and I would encourage everyone to look at that. It also gives the final report of the Nursing Home Safety Task Force. It lists the 38 recommendations of the task force report, and also gives them additional information. It also lists all of the testimonies too.
Mm-hmm.
That were provided during those seven hearings.
All right. There, we'll have to leave it. Sally Patron is the State Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Professor Harmon, Mark Harmon, is clinical professor at the University of Chicago at Law School. Professor Harmon, thank you very much.
Nice to be with you.
Today's broadcast is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by the Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, located in Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377.
WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.
That's it for Focus for this week. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine with Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. In Kansas City, July wheat trading at 462, down 1/2. September 473 and 3/4, down 3/4. Chicago July wheat 437 and 1/4, up 4. September 453 and 3/4, up 3 3/4. July corn 347 and 3/4, up 4 1/2. September 356 and 3/4, up 4 1/4. December 368 and 1/2, up 4. March 381 and 1/2.